Good morning and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book study. My name is Dawn B. and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater from Southern California. Today's Monday, December 23rd, 2024, and this is the 10 a.m. Eastern Time meeting. Today we're reading from the Big Book and we're on page 66, the third paragraph. We turned back to the list through one paragraph ending, "Wish them away any more than alcohol." Commenting on this one paragraph today. Today's readers, 12 Steps, Liz A., 12 Traditions, Leland P. Readers of the text, Sandy K., Eileen M., and Ainsley F. The reference number for Sunday, December 22nd, is 22,015. That's 22015. And for this morning, Monday, December 23rd, 7 a.m. Eastern Time meeting, the reference number is 22,016, 22016. Our newcomer greeter this morning is Chanel T., and Robin P. will do the announcements. Thank you so much to everyone providing service for this meeting. OA Preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose. OA's fifth tradition states, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At a Vision for You Big Book study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. Here are the steps we took, which are suggested as a program of recovery. And I'll now ask Liz A. to read the 12 steps of OA. Star one, Liz.
Sorry, I couldn't get unmuted. Good morning, everyone. This is Liz A., compulsive overeater in California, the 12 steps of Overeaters Anonymous. We admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. 8, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Thank you for letting me be of service.
Thank you so much, Liz A. And I'll now ask Leland P. to read the 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous.
Hi, it's Leland P., recovering compulsive overeater in Berlin, Germany. The 12 traditions. 1, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. 2, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as He may express Himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. 3, The only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. 4. Each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5. Each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6. An OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise. Thus, problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7. Every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8. Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9. OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards and committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10. Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues. Hence, the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, film, television, and other public media of communication. 12. Anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Thanks for letting me be a servant.
Thank you so much, Lilan P. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature and then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year and for readers is 6 months. There's no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute. Once you are done sharing, let us know by saying pass, then press star 1 to mute your phone. To have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speaker's should be muted. Today, we resume our study of the Big Book, and we're on page 66, the third paragraph. We turned back to the list through one paragraph ending, wish them away any more than alcohol, and we'll be commenting on this one paragraph today. And I'll now ask Sandy Kay to read and then share with us.
Thank you, Dawn. This is Sandy Kay, recovered today in New Jersey. We turned back to the list, for it held the key to the future. We were prepared to look at it from an entirely different angle. We began to see that the world and its people really dominated us. In that state, the wrongdoing of others, fancied or real, had power to actually kill. How did we escape? We saw that these resentments must be mastered. But how? We could not wish them away any more than alcohol. When I first read this paragraph, this morning, when I was looking it over, there were a couple of things that stood out to me. One was, in the state of wrongdoing, fancied or real, in the years, and there have been many, that I've been in program, I have come to realize that most of my resentments were based on fancy. It's an old-fashioned word, but they weren't based on reality. And I took it to mean the truth. So I acted, responded, and lived as if those things were true. And I had to look back on the list and really think about what was true and what was imagined. There definitely are some things that people didn't act in a nice way. And those are easier to get rid of. But if it affected this main thread of my life where I wasn't worthy, I wasn't loved, I wasn't good enough, then everything around that that touched it became dramatic in my mind. It said, how could we escape? Well, that means that we're willing to escape. Excuse me. I mean, I was certainly willing to escape. I didn't want to feel unworthy. I wanted to feel like I belonged and that I was good enough. But I didn't know what to do. So the next two paragraphs will tell us what to do. But it wasn't easy. It was like when I gave up sugar. Was it easy? No. I had to rely on my higher power. And my higher power. And very, very quickly, I will say, it was one thread that ran through my entire life, and I'm 76, and it stopped running through my life about 3 years ago. And that was, I finally forgave someone. I mean, really forgave them. I mean, I got rid of the resentment. I didn't have it anymore. And then I found out a year later what the truth really was, and it's not what I thought. So God has a sense of humor. And the fourth step is so important. There are people that go, okay, well, I don't want to do it. Thank you. I don't want to do it. Doesn't make any difference if you want to do it or not. If you want to get recovery, like I did, you have to go through it thorough and honest. Thank you very much for letting me share.
Thank you so much, Sandy Kay. Great way to get us started. And I'll now take the names of people who would like to share on this paragraph. Please keep the topic of your share focused on this paragraph. Although we value your experience, we ask that you limit your sharing to every third day in order that others might share their experiences too. So who would like to share with us?
Wendy B.
Wendy B.
Deborah G.
Deborah G.
Claire E. from the UK.
Claire E. from the UK.
Trudy B. from Maryland.
Trudy B. from Maryland. Anyone else? Okay, let's start with that lineup. I have Wendy B., Deborah G., Claire E., and Trudy B. Wendy B., please go ahead, and your 3 minutes starts now.
Good morning. This is Wendy B., recovered in Arizona. And the line in that paragraph that says, we began to see that the world and its people really dominated us. And, you know, this message was life-changing for me, you know, when I realized I was giving my power away by letting someone else's actions or beliefs cause me to be upset and resentful. And, you know, I started to develop the ideal of being neutral around other people's actions, you know, just like I have the goal of being neutral around the food and, you know, neutral around other people's food choices. I started learning about staying in my own hula hoop, you know, and letting others have their own priorities and make their own choices and carry the responsibility for the consequences of those choices. And I started grasping the concept of going to God with situations that I faced, you know, and asking Him, what's the appropriate response, you know, instead of just reacting without thought, you know, like a rubber band being pulled and the shit flying out. And, you know, and I'm learning self-control and restraint of tongue. You know, and I'm not perfect at it, but I've made a lot of progress, so I don't cause as much damage as I used to. And that's all I have. Thank you for letting me share.
Thank you so much, Wendy B. from Arizona. Deborah G., it's your turn, followed by Claire E.
Oh, good morning, Dawn. Good morning, everyone. And thank you so much for your service today, Dawn, and everyone that's making this meeting possible. And thank you all for sharing so far, 12-stepping me. Oh, I just love this meeting. I love all of you. And welcome, welcome to all the newcomers. Oh, this is just a beautiful way to live. I just recently did a 4-step and a 5th step with my sponsor in another program. And when I was writing out my 4-step, you know, getting through to that 4th column, even in the 3rd column, I could see, you know, it was all about my thinking. That is my problem. my thinking is just so distorted at times. And, you know, and my beliefs, you know, and my perspectives and, you know, my fixing, controlling, managing, manipulating, all that stuff that drives all this stuff, like was shared, it's not reality. It's not true. I can't do any of that. And, you know, when I started to see that and take it in, into my heart, the reality of it, you know, I started to feel this sense of relief, this lifting. I felt more connected to God. You know, I'm having a new experience with God with this. But it's like all that other stuff is what keeps me from that. And I remember my sponsor saying the words, "Not forgiving allows them to keep hurting me." And what was shared earlier, too, to confirm that. So I want to keep that kind of a mindset of, you know, it's not anything out there that's going on. It's about what's going on within me and my thinking and being aware of that so I can take that out into the world. So I can have an open heart. Because I have, when I'm in all this other stuff, my heart is closed. And I want to walk with an open heart and just be loving and kind and compassionate and helpful. You know, that feels good. And when I do those feel good things, there's no need to go to the food. So, but anyways, thank you all. Everyone, have a merry, merry Christmas.
Thank you so much, Deborah G. from Arizona. Claire E. from the UK, it's your turn, followed by Trudy B. And just before Claire's share, I just want to remind people we're on page 66, talking about the 3rd paragraph. We turned back to the list through 1 paragraph ending, "Wish them away any more than alcohol." So after Claire and Trudy, I'll be taking some more names. Go ahead, Claire.
Thank you so much, Dawn. Good to hear you. Thank you to everybody doing service on this meeting. My name's Claire E. I'm a compulsive eater bulimic from the UK. So much in this paragraph, isn't it? So the notes I have down the side, which I've just reread, and I really love this, actually. It says, "The things that I believe are true are not. They're merely the angle and lens I see my life through. There are no objective truths. Nothing in my life is true without me looking at it in a particular way." And, you know, I suppose that's just it. You know, there is the key to the future, because I just suffer from a disease of misperception. You know, everything that happens in my life goes through this sort of self-centered filter to my brain. And, you know, I'm very much guilty of being oversensitive and of sort of looking for almost confirmation bias for various things from other people. And, you know, when I do that, other people's behaviour dominates me. I'm really at the whim of how other people choose to behave towards me as to how I feel. And, you know, that's what I get by starting to look back at this list and seeing it from a different angle. You know, in that state where I live with that filter, the wrongdoing of others, fancied or real, has the power to kill me. Well, why does it have the power to kill me? Because there's a dog. I clock a resentment, you know, then I harbour that feeling. I shut myself off from the sunlight of spirit, and I have no access to my higher power. So the insanity of food, it then feels, you know, that food is a step up to the way I feel, and off I go, and that could kill me. And so, you know, what I really need to do is level myself. And it comes onto this with the sick man's prayer. You know, I need to know that other people behave the way they do, and it's nothing to do with me, really. And that I have a choice as to how I see things that happen to me. And, you know, other people can behave appallingly, you know, fancied or real. People can behave badly. You know, I've got a person in my life at the moment who objectively in the last 12 months has behaved really badly towards certain family members. But I have a real choice about that. You know, I can either decide to sit in it and fester resentment, or I can really choose to try and see her as a spiritually unwell person too. And how can I escape? You know, again, it's that self cannot overcome self. I know that resentment is poisonous to me, but when I'm in one, I can't get rid of it by myself. You know, I absolutely have to have help from my higher power and frequently from fellows and from my sponsor as well to help me see, have a different perspective, help me share it, help me get some perspective, and help me let go of that resentment. You know, I cannot wish away. It's not my idea, however good my ideals, my philosophies, my teachings, my learning of the big book, you know, my therapy, I can't wish this stuff away. You know, I absolutely have to have help with it from elsewhere, from outside of myself. I mean, trying to control my resentments is like trying to control my food. In denying I have resentment is like denying I have a problem with food too. I have to use the sort of process outlined in the next few paragraphs. And it's brilliant. We really come onto the solution here of how do I start seeing these things differently? How do I start having a non-self-centered perspective of everything that happens to me, you know, as to a way of life that I can deal with? I hope that made sense. It was good to be here. Thank you. I'll leave it there.
Thank you so much, Claire E. from the UK. Trudy B. from Maryland, it's your turn. Star one, Trudy B. Star one, Trudy. Okay. I am now going to take the names of people who would like to share on this paragraph, although...
Hello. I'm here. Sorry.
Okay.
Yeah, this is Trudy B.
Okay, very good. Go ahead, Trudy, and then I'll take more names.
Yeah, playing with the buttons and stuff this morning. Sorry about that, group.
No worries.
I'm Trudy
Go ahead.
B from Maryland. I'm real grateful to be here. Thank everybody for the service. You know, I've done about 7 or 8 four steps, and each time I do a four step, I seem to wind up in another program because apparently I had a lot of things going on and a lot of resentment. But, you know, I remember in my family, the part I played was I was a scapegoat. Everything that went wrong was my fault. And my expectations of people is a lot of the resentments I had, fancied or real. But, you know, people can't give you what they don't have. They just can't. So even though I expected more out of my parents because they couldn't give me what I wanted, my expectations went unfounded and I had all these resentments. But I remember doing a fourth step and I had put my father on the list because my father molested me when I was about 3 years old. And I remember sitting down on my bed after I had done, you know, did a fourth step and I had proceeded on and went on. But I remember sitting down on my bed and this feeling came up on me and it rose out. And, you know, I had really disliked my father and held on to that resentment for years. But the fourth step helped me to put it down and just give it away. I didn't know what was going to happen, but I'm telling you, a feeling came on over me. And I was able to forgive my father and feel love toward him. Now, that's powerful. You know, I'm grateful that I was able to do that because I didn't never think I would be able to forgive him for what he did. And, you know, my mother, I was able to, you know, forgive her as well. You know, and I come from a family with alcoholics. It just run rapid in the family. So my expectation of people don't mean a thing because this disease takes preference over everything. They're going to do what this disease tell them to regardless of what I think. So I had to learn how to love and tolerate my family and other people regardless of what I thought. So that cut down on some of the resentment. Instead of me thinking that they should be doing this or that, I have to learn how to forgive people in and out of this program, regardless of what I feel or I think they should be doing. People are going to do whatever it is that their life dictates for them to do. But I'm just grateful to be here and grateful that I could share that with the group. And I'm going to mute and pass. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Trudy B. from Maryland. And now I'm going to be taking a list of names of people who would like to share in this paragraph. Although we value your experience, we ask that you limit your sharing to every third day in order that others might share their experiences too. So who would like to share? I so appreciate your enthusiasm. But I think I got one name out of that. Was there a Wendy in there? Wendy M., did I hear?
Yeah. Yeah, Don.
Okay. Okay, Wendy M.
Eileen.
Barbara.
Michelle
E.
B.
Okay, I heard Barbara E., and then I heard a Michelle.
Ainsley
F. Janie E. in Michigan.
Was there a Michelle in there?
Yes.
And what's your initial?
From Maryland. Oh.
Michelle C.
Michelle C., and then I heard an Ainsley and a Darlene. What's your initial, Darlene?
It's Darlene D. from Maryland.
Perfect. Okay, who else?
Gary D.
Gary. I heard a Gary D.
Eileen.
Okay,
let me,
Florida.
And an Eileen.
Janie G.
And a Jamie G. And let's stop there. And I'll tell you who I have. I have Wendy M., Barbara E., Michelle C., Ainsley F., Darlene D., Gary D., Eileen M., and Jamie G. Did I miss anyone?
Sonia Hubbard. I mean, Sonia H., California.
Sonia, we will add you on to the end there. Thank you so much to everyone. Wendy M., it's your turn, followed by Barbara E.
Good morning. Wendy M., recovered in Boulder, Colorado. Don, thank you for your service and obviously everybody on the line. I mean, this is a divinely inspired book. I mean, the words are phenomenal, right? It's like, how did they know this? So it says, we're prepared. We are prepared to look, thinking, at it from an entirely different angle. Well, that's what this book is about, right? It's about having an entirely different reaction to life. Life is the same. My mom and my sister, who I have resented for a very long time, they're the same people. What they say is going to be the same. It doesn't even matter, right? What matters is that I will look at this world from an entirely different angle. I will get freedom from the bondage of how much I have hated these people, right? And then it says, we began to see the world and its people really dominated us. Okay, now we're going to see something different, right? So what this whole book is about as well is going from insane to sane. So my insane thought is this makes sense to hate them. I'll get something from it, right? Because not only do I binge on food, which is a dishonest act, I also binge on resentment, right? I get something for about 8 seconds. Boy, and I can justify it. Let me just tell you what my mother did to me. Really, really, really. The only person this is killing is me, right? And I need and want freedom. This whole thing is about my thinking, right? My thoughts about my mother that will kill me. It says it. It says that power actually kills. Absolutely. I've been the walking dead. I've been agnostic with regard to my resentment towards some family members. And I've been unwilling to release this, right? And all God wants us to do is change our thinking. Am I willing to undo? Am I willing to see something from an entirely different angle? Well, yes, I absolutely am. Why? I want sanity. Also, I want to be useful on this planet. I cannot be useful if I keep holding on to these justifiable, rageful resentments towards these people. I want freedom. I want to let these people off the hook. I want to let myself off the hook, right? And we saw that, and it shows us why next, how this works, right? How we let go. But first, we need to identify that the resentment is a lie. We must lie to get the hit, whether it's food, whether it's the resentment, right? Because we've been eating and I've been binging on resentment my entire life, right? All it's done is made me in bondage to myself, and very, very unhappy and not useful to God. And that's the most important part. Thanks for letting me share. I pass.
Thank you so much. Perfect timing. Wendy M. from Colorado. Barbara E., it's your turn, followed by Michelle C.
Good morning, everyone. Happy Monday. Happy December holidays to everyone. It's Barbara E., a compulsive overeater, living my life one day at a time. Yes, this book has been divinely written, and I think it also speaks about courage. It's the courage I have, the physical courage to keep going with resiliency and balance and awareness, and the social courage. I had to learn that, to be myself unapologetically. I can be the sweetest peach in the world, but not everyone is going to like peaches. And moral courage, doing the right thing, even when it's uncomfortable or unpopular. Hanging on to a resentment means I'm holding on to a relationship with a person or situation that is not good for me. I need the emotional courage to feel my emotions, both positive and negative, without guilt or detachment. I have to go with the flow of the river, the ups and downs of life, with unexpected changes. And courage doesn't always roar. It's that quiet voice at the end of the day that's saying, we'll try again tomorrow. So this book tells me I need intellectual courage to learn and unlearn and learn again with an open and flexible mind. And then there's the spiritual courage, living with purpose and leaning through a heart-centered approach towards all life and oneself. Have a beautiful day, everyone. I pass.
Thank you so much, Barbara E. from New Jersey. Michelle C., it's your turn to share.
Hi, this is Michelle C. from Missouri. And good morning, everyone. I'm happy to be on this meeting. I don't normally get to be on this meeting live, so I'm super grateful to be here. But what we read today just again reminds me of that perspective shift that God gives me. It's not something I can do on my own. And it's happened so many times in my life because normally, as mentioned before, you know, my go-to perspective is pretty fear-based. I'm usually expecting the worst, seeing the worst in people and situations, and it's just not true. But darn it, I sure feel like it's true. And I'm so grateful to have a God today that shows me the truth if I am seeking God and I'm seeking the truth. And it's happened again and again. I'm a second grade teacher, and this example just popped in my head as to an example of such a big perspective shift. But I think it was last year at the beginning of the school year, another teacher looked at the list of kids I was going to be getting, and she was like, oh man, you really got stacked with behaviors. I can't believe they put this kid and this kid and this kid together in your room. And I was already, my resentment was already starting to build. I was like, okay, they're out to get me. The people that created this list don't like me. Don't they know what this is going to be like? You know, definitely in self-pity and fear. And I remember I had about 10 minutes to myself before one of our beginning of the year teacher meetings, and I just sat in my car and prayed. And by the end of that quiet time in that prayer, God had already shifted my thinking to gratitude. There's no way I could have done that on my own. God had already had my thinking change to, like, you were meant to have these kids. These kids are going to be teaching you something, and you have the tools to show these kids love and support and create a safe place for them. And God was like, I believe in you, and there's a reason for this. No one's doing this to you. It's a gift. And so I left that quiet time being like, these are my kids. No one else is going to get to have these kids. They're mine. And I'm so grateful. And that is absolutely nothing I could have done on my own. And I'm just so grateful that God can show me the beauty and the truth in this world because I can't do it on my own. And with that, I will pass.
Thank you so much, Michelle C. from Missouri. Ainsley F., it's your turn, followed by Darlene D.
Hi, this is Ainsley F., compulsive overeater in Michigan. I really appreciate the opportunity to do service this month because it has finally kind of broken my fear of sharing. I've been on this meeting for over a year, and last week when I read time I had shared. So I'm thankful, really thankful for this meeting. I think I shared last week that for me, when I'm feeling resentment, it stems from the fact that I'm feeling hurt. And when it hurts too much to feel the hurt, then I feel angry, and that's the resentment for me. And what I'm noticing right now is just with some things that have been going on this fall, that I am struggling with feeling resentful and helpless over something that my husband won't let go of, where he perceives I hurt him. And, you know, boy, if that isn't a convoluted way to, boy, I can find a resentment somewhere if I really dig, if I dig deep enough into someone else's stuff, then I can find my own resentment somewhere. And, you know, in this case, it was something where I had to lovingly set a boundary 4 years ago, and made it clear that it was out of love, but it hurt him, hurt his feelings. And, but you know what, I can't control whether or not he lets go of his resentments. And I can't control how it affects me, except that if I choose to let that keep hurting me, then that's resentment. I appreciate that line that was shared. You know, I do have to, this is where the serenity prayer comes in, where I have to have the serenity to accept the things I can't change. And I can't change what someone else thinks about me. I can't change what the motive that someone else thinks that I had. I can't change any of those things because that's someone else. But I need the courage to change the things I can, which is to let it go and let go of what someone else thinks of me and continue to lovingly set any boundaries I need for my own personal safety. And, I think that's all I have today. Thank you very much for letting me share.
Thank you so much, Ainsley F. from Michigan. Darlene D., it's your turn, followed by Gary D.
Hi, I'm Darlene D., a compulsive overeater from Maryland, and thank you. I'm grateful that, you know, God led me to dial in today. The passage reading where it talked about that state of being fancy or real. I'm so grateful that it speaks to that because my experience was that it was all in my head. And people were responding to my behavior. And that just made the resentment to go deeper. But once I had somebody else kind of look at that, look at my resentments and what was going on, they allowed me to see that this was all going on possibly in my head. It may not have been real. And people were responding to my behavior. So how it opened up the key was I changed because I let that faulty thinking, I let it go. God helped me release it. And so now people are able to respond to me differently. As much as I wanted everybody else to change, the person that needed to change was me. But I couldn't see it because it was happening within myself. But being able to put it down on paper and share it with somebody else, it has held the key to my future. Life is a bit different for me today because I'm no longer reacting to the craziness. I'm able to respond. And before I make that assumption that this is what's going on, I always clarify it with someone else. And the beauty in not being able to have to do it alone and to lean into my higher power, whom I choose to call God, to help guide me to that faulty thinking that left my life in so much pain. I was actually dying on the inside. Today I'm different, and I'm just so very grateful. Again, I'm Darlene D. from Maryland. Thanks so much for allowing me to share. Okay.
Thank you so much, Darlene D. Gary D., it's your turn, followed by Eileen M. And just a quick reminder, we're talking about page 66, the third paragraph. We turned back to the list through one paragraph ending, wish them away any more than alcohol. Go ahead, Gary, it's your turn to share.
Hello, everybody. I'm a recovered compulsive eater. My name is Gary. And the first thing is, you know, resentment might be the number one offender, but number two, number three, and number 17 can mess me up pretty good, too. I mean, that's not the only thing I have to be concerned with in my inventory or in my life. And like somebody else said, I've been in LA a long time, and I've done quite a few fourth steps. But one of the things I discovered in my very first fourth step, and that had to do with that fancy or real thing, before I even got to the fifth step, just in writing out my fourth step, I realized that that my memory was so good, I could remember things that never even happened. Because just looking at the timeline, like I had written down things that I knew couldn't have happened. Like I remembered things happening in the Bronx that couldn't have happened because by that time I was living in Queens. And things like that, things that made no sense. And I was so surprised that things I had believed all my life turned out to be and there were some things that I didn't even remember. There were things I was told, like my mother had told me stories about things that happened when I was a child, and I held resentments about these things that I'd have no memory of, but that my mother told me. Like, I don't even know if they were true or not. So there's a lot of made up stuff. And the other thing I wanted to say kind of quickly, both in my experience in working the steps myself and with working with others, is that forgiveness for me and for the people I sponsor is an eighth step issue, not a fourth step issue, because forgiveness eliminates a lot of the pain. And I kind of need that pain to work through six and seven. I kind of need that. I need my defects up front and close to me so I can see what I need to work through. If I start eliminating that pain too much in the fifth step and start too quickly with forgiveness in the fourth step, I start feeling good. I start feeling better. And my experience is that an addict who's starting to feel okay is dangerous. I kind of need the hurt of what I've done in front of me to work six and seven. And then I'm ready, having faced my defects of character, I'm ready to forgive in the eighth step. Anyhow, that's just my experience, and not directive in any way.
Time.
Thank you.
Thanks so much, Gary D. Eileen M., it's your turn, followed by Jamie G.
Good morning, Eileen M. I'm a very grateful recovered compulsive overeater in New Hampshire. So I'm looking at that line, we are prepared to look at the list from an entirely different angle. This process in this chapter shows me precisely how to clean up my thinking, because it reveals to me what exactly my thinking is. And it's an opportunity to just see how my thinking does cause my problems. I wanted to say that before I came to Vision, before I found the Vision meeting, I was going to these face-to-face meetings, and, you know, I would go there and I would talk about resentment, having resentments, and someone one day directed me to page 552 and said, oh, this is what you do when you have a resentment. And, you know, I hadn't been doing four steps this way at all. The way that we're doing them in the big book. And, what happened was I would pray that prayer. It suggests on that page, it's a personal story, and it talks about praying for people that you resent, and that's how it gets removed. And, you know, nowhere in that prayer really does it suggest that you're asking God to remove the resentment or to remove the anger. And, you know, it's wonderful to pray for people that way. However, it doesn't address my thinking problem. So it really didn't work that well. It's probably, you know, it probably would work much better after you've done this four step this way. It works better that way. But, it's just the next paragraph that we're going to be reading tomorrow, you know, is really more specific in asking God to remove the anger, you know. And I'm just so grateful about this process, because this really does remove resentments. And anyway, so just thank you for letting me share. I pass.
Thank you so much, Eileen M. Jamie G., it's your turn to share.
Hi, this is Jamie, J-A-N-S-N-Nancy-I-E-G in Michigan. Oh, so many good shares. And I can relate so much to this, just like the disease fills my, you know, tells me lies and uses my own voice. It's, you know, when I think about other people, it seems to me anyway that it's really a projection onto them of what the disease is telling me about myself. So it's all this mental twist and double twist that I really need to be free from. And, you know, like the confirmation bias reminds me of how I'll have a faulty thesis statement. You know, I taught English for 36 years, and if I start on a wrong premise, I start with a wrong position, then I'm going to be looking for evidence to support that position. But I may be on a wrong track with that. And if that's based on a lie that disease is telling me about other people, about myself, I'll probably find lots of evidence and continue to feed that. You know, and I used to do that by venting, I called it, you know, which just adds oxygen to the fire, you know. But I really need God's help to change that thesis statement. I know that, you know, like my students could have a topic, and one student could have one angle and the other one could have another one. And that was like, what is their controlling idea behind the position? And so I know that's possible, but I can't do that myself. And that's why I need God. You know, and I really have spent most of my life trying to control other people's, or at least thinking about what other people need to do different. But I've learned in program that boundaries are what I determine I will do. Like, I can't control that other people smoke, but I can say that in my house, we don't smoke. You know, there's no smoking in my house. And that's kind of, you know, what I can do with, you know, with myself. I can say, you know, for me, this is what I'm going to do. And it's mostly, you know, things that I'm doing proactively, doing my dailies, you know. And when I don't do that, I'm just going to fall for any lie that the disease tells me. So the boundaries I need to set are for me and what I'm going to do ahead of time so that God can heal me, you know, and change my way of thinking, change my mind. An entire psychic change is what I need. And I'm so thankful I can get that through these 12 steps that connect me to a God much, much bigger and much, much more powerful than I am. So with that, I'll pass.
Thank you so much, Janie G. from Michigan. And Sonia, I'm sorry we don't have time for you to share today, but please come back tomorrow. We would love to hear what you have to say. So we're now going to close with a reading from the Big Book on page 164, followed by the Serenity Prayer. Will Eileen M. please read a vision for you? Our book is meant to be suggestive only. Keep you until then.
Hi, Eileen M., recovered compulsive overeater in New Hampshire. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order, but obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until